It's Palmer. All right, we're talking about shell games today. What about shell games? We're talking with former U.S. diplomat David Hunter. Good morning.
Good morning, Red. It's nice to be here.
And, back from L.A. No, no, back from Los Angeles.
Back from Las Vegas.
Las Vegas, L.V. L.V.
Notice there's a loss in that L-O-S-S.
Loss.
Las Vegas.
Yeah, but it's not spelled that way.
I know, but it's meant
no,
that
I
way.
Did not gamble, not once, not one iota, not one penny.
Good
don't
for
like
you.
It.
Good for
no,
you.
Don't
yeah.
like smoky joints with...
Yeah,
poor working people that lose all their money. I can't believe even in the gas stations in the town half a mile away, they're pulling the one arm bandits and the gas station. I mean, it's like this obsessiveness.
Well, they even have here in Florida out there at Lake Okeechobee. There's some buses that go out there gambling. It's run on the Seminole Indian Reserve or something.
I will
like
say
that.
This: the grandmother though that left me money. She used to get on that bus. She used to live in Oceanside.
Yeah?
She got on that bus and went to Las Vegas all the time. I'm surprised. She was penny wise and pound foolish. Hadn't seen her in 8 years. Flew out to L.A. to see her, right, with my girlfriend, right?
Yeah.
Or not L.A. Flew into L.A. and drove, huh?
L.V.
Yeah, flew out to L.A., though. I flew out to L.A. in California to see her. And went down to Oceanside. Anyway, so you know what she had? Hadn't seen her in 8 years. Hamburger helper. That's a, when I used to go see her when she lived in Florida before that husband died, Alan, who I really liked. She would give us one paper napkin, my brother and I, for the week. And you had to keep that paper napkin all week. One glass of milk per meal, one cookie, one scoop of ice cream. That was for dessert. That's it. I mean, she was El Cheapo.
Yeah.
But then she moves. Her next husband dies.
Yeah.
And she sells the condo back then, which, you know, could have gone for maybe 80 grand. She sells it for 49,000 just to get rid of it quick.
Yeah.
Then she leaves, gives the car away or something like that. I remember thinking, gosh, she's pound. A lot of people are that way. They're penny wise and pound foolish.
Pound foolish.
Why?
Yeah. Anyway, the shell games, you ask about that.
Yeah, what is that all about?
Well, the issue here is the second part of that is running out of ammo. And we've got.
I know what you're going to talk about.
We've got a problem in Ukraine with what's called the 155 millimeter artillery shells. Those are being used for the cannons and for tank shells, both.
Who's holding up the approval?
And, well, it's not a question of holding up approval. It's a question of running out of money and running out of shells, both. That's the thing.
So we've run out of shells to give them?
Yeah, this is a problem. There've been, you know, keep in mind, this is something.
Now, if we were fighting a war, we'd make damn sure that we had enough shells.
Well, and that's part of the problem, because what we're saying is we're running out of shells because we don't want to give any more shells because we want to be sure we have enough for ourselves. If we have a war, this is a problem.
We need it for our shelves.
We need it for our shelves, right. So this has become a major problem. You remember hearing about Avdiivka and the Ukrainians lost the Battle of Avdiivka and had to surrender that. That was in the news in the last month or so.
Yeah.
And that was seen as a defeat of the Ukrainians. Well, and the evidence that the Russians are more powerful. Well, the reality is the Russians ran out of shells. They didn't have enough shells to keep in the fight. You don't have shells to fight. You don't have bullets when you're in your gun, you're going to have to retreat. And that's what the Ukrainians did. It wasn't for lack of their wanting to fight. It was for the lack of ammo. Now, this issue of ammo is really pretty darn important because, you know, what happened was after the attack, the brutal attack by Hamas in Israel, the next day or two, the Israelis immediately called the United States and said, we need a lot of these 155 millimeter shells because we're going to launch an invasion into Gaza. And therefore, it's an emergency to meet our needs for this invasion of Gaza. So the United States was in a quandary. They're saying, you know, well, wait a minute, we need all these shells for Ukraine. We don't have a lot of shells. You know, it's not an unlimited supply. But anyway, Tony Blinken granted emergency, you heard, remember that, he granted emergency provision for Israel for the shipment of this so-called, without congressional approval, for this supply of shells to Israel. Now, Israel's supply of shells was at least 50,000, 60,000 shells. What I found out looking into this is that we have a huge ammunition stockpile in Israel for the United States. It's called
They can't use it without our permission.
They can't use it without our permission. It's considered to be an American stockpile.
So we have military bases in Israel.
We have a warehouse in Israel. I wouldn't call it a military base,
have a military base there?
I don't know, but we don't. But we certainly have this huge warehouse, and they've actually used the supplies. Israel has used the supplies of that in the past. In the 2014 Gaza conflict, they asked permission and were granted some of the ammo out of that huge American warehouse. It's called the War Reserve Stocks for Allies Israel. That's the technical term for it. They came up with it. WRSAI. So the question now is, the U.S. is saying to Ukraine right now, well, we don't know if we can supply you with more of these artillery shells because we can't compromise our own reserve stocks. Now, the question is that talking about, you know, they're talking about replenishing the supplies. You don't ship normally directly from the factory to the field, to the army out in the field. You ship to the warehouse, and then the warehouse is filled up, and then it's drained out and refilled. The problem is we don't have enough manufacturing capacity to make shells in the quantities that are needed. Ukraine is using, or was using up until recently, about 5,000 shells a day firing. Now, that sounds like a lot. Like, boy, they're being wasteful. Mm-hmm. But
5,000.
5,000 shells a day. But keep in mind, they're having a long static line of artillery battle between the Russians and the Ukrainians, just like World War I. And the Russians are using 40,000 shells a day, 40. Mm-hmm. So I don't know where the Russians are getting them all. I mean, they're starting to get them from North Korea, and they're buying stuff from Iran, and you know, maybe China's supplying them. I don't know. But the problem is, you know, the Ukrainians can't have a fair fight if they don't have the ability to arm themselves and defend themselves. And then you get into the issue of Israel saying, well, we need shells too, because we're fighting in Gaza. So clearly, if a resolution in Gaza comes up and the war stops, they won't need those shells, and that will relieve some of the pressure on.
Yeah, but that's only going to be a temporary stop.
Well, we don't know. You know, that's it's unknown what's going to happen there.
Well, Cristina Cuomo was reporting yesterday that they were allowed finally, I guess almost like the Israelis have been holding on to this kind of card over here, and they invited different reporters to come in, and they showed video on how these Hamas people, the regular people, not just, we're talking about Palestinians who live there, were tying up families and burning them in front of crowds and rejoicing over this on October 7th and October 8th. And this report that they took some of them and put them in storage, you know, for this negotiation thing. But they found the women with their bloody genitals.
I know.
And yeah. And for some reason, our press has been negligent in covering that whole side. It's all been pro-Hamas,
okay.
The day after.
Okay.
I have actual headlines. The day after the attack of October 7th, people were saying that it was atrocious what the Israelis had already started to do to Hamas.
Okay, well, this gets into a who said, she said kind of debate.
Who said? She said. Yeah. Well, they just released this video.
Yeah, I know.
And
who
Cuomo,
is they?
Who's a left?
Who is they that just released this?
I don't know.
Okay. Well, anyway, let me just explain
this.
Well,
Cuomo was privy to it.
Okay.
CNN.
Okay. Let me explain this. Israel. I'm not saying that bad things didn't happen on January 6th. I mean,
horrific
on October 7th.
Things.
Horrific
and not
things.
Just by Hamas, but by the Palestinian people.
Okay. There is an attempt, a conscious attempt by the Israeli government and the IDF to demonize the Palestinian people.
Hamas has said over and over again, we want to annihilate Israel. We want them to be gone. Israel just says, we just want to live here in peace. And a few years ago, if you look at the truth, they took Hamas. I mean, they took the place called the Gaza.
Yeah.
And they left. They left all their water plants. They left their farms and everything so they could have it and succeed.
Okay.
And then Hamas took over and raped and pillaged the people.
Okay. You're using...
If there were any good people in Palestinian, they were raped and pillaged.
You're using inflammatory words. There was no raping and pillaging going on of Palestinians by Hamas. Okay? That's wrong.
That's not wrong.
And your information...
They subjugated and took all the good that the Israelis had left behind. And you refused to see this.
Well,
I don't know why.
Well, Rhett, you refuse to.
How come you refuse to see it?
You refuse.
Why are you so anti-Israel?
Okay, I'm not anti-Israel.
You
I want to explain.
Yes.
No,
at least admit it.
No, I'm not going to admit it because I'm not anti-Israel, but I'm anti-Zionism, and I'm also anti-lies by the Israeli government.
Well, it's not lies. It's stuff
I'll prove to you. I'll prove it to you. Okay. I'm gonna. You wait for the remainder of this show, and if you don't believe what I've told you, then you're going to essentially say that the entire establishment, including the United Nations and all of these organizations, they're all anti-Zionist. Everybody's anti-Zionist.
It's amazing. What I want to know is this. Let's take a side.
What?
Why is everybody before this? Why are they anti?
Yeah, you're.
Why, are they anti-
why does the whole world hate Israel?
Yes.
Yeah, that's the question. Your question.
Yes.
Yeah.
And they did in the World War II.
No, they didn't in World War II. That was Nazis in World War II that hated Israel.
We wouldn't even accept a boatload of Jews when they came here to be saved.
Okay.
And they went back to their death.
Okay, I know. There were some we accepted more than a boatload. The United States is the largest number of Jews outside of Israel living here in the United States. We've accepted
now,
a lot of Jews.
Now.
No, even back then there were lots
of
Jews.
You know about the boat that I'm talking about.
Yeah. Yeah, I know there was a boat that was turned back, But you know, there were some arguments that—
Why the hatred, though? Where did this all start? This is long before this whole thing, even before there wasn't Israel.
Well—
Why the hatred towards
the
Jews?
Well, to be honest, you know, as far as Adolf—
Yeah, be honest.
As far as Adolf Hitler and his crew was concerned—
Yeah.
And also, to be probably the Catholic Church as well, they were not very pro-Israelis.
I was told that when I was a little kid. The only thing I heard in my neighborhood was— that the Jews killed the Savior.
That goes back to the Middle Ages. You know,
but in my household, we were never taught any prejudice against Jews or blacks or anybody else.
So the Catholic Church has had that pogrom or
what's the word?
A pogrom or
pogrom?
Belief. A pogrom is a putting into ghettos and mistreating persecuting. They have had that going back to the Middle Ages. The Nazis under Adolf Hitler— one of his main arguments was that the Jews were Bolsheviks. They were all tied in. The Jews were involved very heavily
and
in the—
What does that mean?
The Bolsheviks were the communist revolution.
So that they were going to subvert the authorities
and
in,
they were
in Germany.
Anti-Christian, by the way. From the Catholic Church's point of view. And
didn't Hitler claim that he was a Christian, I think, or something? I don't know.
Well, Hitler had two
what did
different—
What did I just say? Did I say Hitler?
Hitler, yeah. Hitler had two different philosophies. One was claiming that he was Christian. Mussolini was definitely Christian. He was a Catholic, Mussolini. But Adolf Hitler was some of his group of Nazis were trying to promote a new form of religion where they would substitute the swastika for the cross. And they would substitute Mein Kampf, which is the book that he wrote when he was in prison, for the Bible.
Did you ever read that at all?
No. But there was an attempt to substitute Nazism for Christianity as a part
of— Let me ask you this. Okay, you didn't read Mein Kampf, neither did I.
Yeah.
Okay. So really, and you're going a whole lot deeper than I've gone,
but
even though you've gone a whole lot deeper— Aren't our conversations really quite superficial? If you took the sun and you took the fire on the outside, it's kind of like we're studying this fire and the emotionalism and the inflammation and the flames and then this whole center thing that really would take a lifetime of somebody to delve into. I mean, you and I mean, if we're going to really be any kind – we're not experts, and I don't pretend to be. And, you know, even you haven't read Mein Kampf. It's like, shouldn't we have read that? I mean,
no, I don't think it's necessary. I think let me get back to the point.
Did you read Mein Kampf?
Yeah. All right. Let's get back to the.
No, but it's Kampf with an A. Don't know.
Say it again.
Kampf. It's not Kampf. You're making it sound like you're coughing.
Kampf.
Okay. Kampf. Anyway, let's not.
Are you comfortable?
Yeah. Let's not focus on that.
Kampf.
The the issue of Israel, you know, you're talking about the fact that, you know, the media is not giving Israel fair play. I would argue, along with, for example, a major number of reporters, senior reporters from CNN, that the CNN has actually, with Christian Amanpour as one of the leads in this, they have charged openly now. It's actually a leaked— Charged that CNN is not providing fair coverage of the Gaza war, that they are only providing information about the hostages and about the IDF spokesman's comments and all that kind of stuff, which is what I find when I watch mainstream media news here in America, the same thing. And I also have found evidence from a Israeli Knesset member who is anti-war. He wants to have a ceasefire, and he has spoken out about that. And they have— the Israeli Knesset has tried to throw him out of the Knesset for taking that position.
Now, what is the Knesset?
That's the Congress. The Knesset is the Congress.
So,
and for his speaking as an anti-war protester, they are trying to throw him out of the Congress. They had a vote. They didn't succeed, but they were trying to remove him from Congress because he does not support the war against Hamas
in
Gaza.
It's too bad that people can't embrace Viva la Difference and all this stuff. I mean, that sounds very flip, but it's like, you know, it's kind of like what Colorado wanted to do with Trump. Don't let him run at all. No, you don't get in. You don't subjugate. Anybody gets to run. Let the people decide, you know.
Yeah.
And the same here, even in Israel. I want objectivity. I want somebody who's—
Of course you do. I understand.
We want to find the truth.
And what this guy is saying, the one from the Knesset, his name is Ofer Kassif. He is saying that the Israeli media is only providing one side, only, as I said, the heroic troops and the they throw in the slaughter.
They remind
you of the slaughter on October 7th and all
absolutely,
that. But they do not talk about the slaughter of Palestinian children.
When we got attacked in
9/11.
Pearl Harbor.
Pearl Harbor. Okay.
Now, we didn't go slapping the wrists of Japan. That was a declaration of war. Really, Hamas declared a war when they came in and did that October 7th. That's their Pearl Harbor.
We'll get to that because, to be honest, that is not a war. What Hamas did was not a declaration of war. They were not a state. They were an occupied people inside a state occupied by Israel.
That's a declaration of war.
And therefore, that you can't declare war when you're inside, when you're an occupied people inside being occupied. You can't declare war.
Come on.
That's a technicality of the laws of war.
You never will admit. I want you to look into this. How many Israelis left? What year was that? 2005, you said?
Yeah.
And the Israelis left, weeping and crying. They were mad at their government. We have to leave this Gaza Strip because we're leaving behind our businesses. They're leaving behind their water plants. They're leaving behind their farmers.
Rhett. Gaza Strip was designated back in 1967 as Palestinian territory. There were not supposed to be any Israeli settlers there. If they were there, they were illegal settlers. How did they get there?
Hold on. How did they get in there?
The same way they're getting into Jerusalem today.
Do you know that almost 50% of the population in Israel is Palestinian?
Actually, not in Israel. Because technically, if you call the borderlines of Israel versus the occupied territories,
Arab lady was on YouTube that night said, "We've even been in charge of the Knesset." She said, "I've been treated great all my life here, living in Israel."
There are 20% Arabs living in the quote,
and they're treated with total equality.
Excuse me, that's not true. But the reality is that there are 20% of Arabs living inside what's called official Israel.
I wish we had a big shot show. You
official
know, I would send you over there and say, David, why don't you go over there? Wouldn't you like to right now? Go over there to Israel and really talk to the people. Just like if you sent me over to not Palestine, you sent me over to the Gaza Strip right now, and I was inside. I love people. I mean,
you know,
just like the people down at the border here.
I know you do.
I'd be letting everybody in because I'm a bleeding heart liberal
would be pained by what's going on, and we're going to talk about that. That's the next topic, in fact, is about the Hunger Games.
I do want to know this.
The Hunger Games.
What the hell is going on in the world?
Well, it's not in the world.
Why do we let these millions of people in here to infiltrate America?
Okay, let's not get to the broader world. Let's just talk about the topics that we have for today.
All right.
And so I think the main thing I want to
rattle your cage.
No, the main thing I want to point out is that the news in Israel is very slanted and very limited. The Israeli citizens are not seeing what's happening in Gaza.
The other side is not slanted.
Let me finish my point. So the reality is, and this is according to this member of the Knesset, this guy, Mr. Kassif, he's saying. The fact is the Israeli people don't want to know what's going on in Gaza. They don't want to know that the troops are dropping bombs and buildings are being blown up and people are dying of starvation.
Nobody wants to know.
They don't want to know that. No. Now, the irony of this not wanting to know.
And they, Palestinians, probably didn't want to know what Hamas was doing prior to all this.
Okay.
Either.
Anyway, the reality is they did not want to know. They don't want to know. They are turning a blind eye to what Israel is doing inside Gaza.
You and I are turning a blind eye to the whole thing.
No, I'm not. If you are, that's your problem.
Are you doing anything?
I'm investigating and talking on the show about this so that people can know. They don't have to sit there.
What difference are we going to make?
If people listen to the show, they may decide. There's stuff changing. The reality is even the United States position on Israel is changing rapidly. Okay? Mr. Benny Gantz, who is the member of the Blue and White Party and a member of the War Cabinet of Israel, but an opponent of Benjamin Netanyahu, he's in the United States right now. Actually, he just left the United States. Now he's meeting with the British. He's meeting with David Cameron, who's the foreign minister in Britain. But he's basically been read the Riot Act, meaning the U.S. and Britain are now reading the Riot Act to Israel, saying, enough is enough. This is outrageous. What you're doing is terrible. Now, we're going to get on to that as the next topic, which is Israel engaged in starvation of the Palestinians as an act of war? Are they essentially trying to starve to death the Palestinians?
We certainly, when we got towards the end of World War II, we weren't sending food over to the Germans.
Well, certainly the Germans—
the people were starving to death.
Right, certainly the Germans were also—they used something. This is the next topic,
they
folks.
Used what?
They used starvation as a weapon of war.
Uh-huh. Where did they use it?
It's in Eastern Europe— and against the Jews. When you think about all the people that died, the Jews were starved to death. This was an intentional starvation. Many of the people in these concentration camps or in the ghettos, they were given like 400 calories a day as their food allocation.
And some of it was sawdust was put in the soup to make them feel full.
So basically, they were being starved to death. There were several million people in Eastern Europe that were starved to death.
What happens to when you eat a lot of sawdust?
Well, the point is, there was actually a name for this. It was called the Hunger Plan.
The Nazis had a plan.
The Hunger Plan. It was an official plan to starve, deprive food for the Jews and Slavs living in Ukraine and Russia. Okay? A war of starvation.
Wow.
That's what happened. And, of course, everybody raises their hands and says, oh, how terrible. The Nazis committed this Holocaust and killed by starving to death and shooting, of course, and gassing. But
Poles.
All of these Poles and Jews. Now, the reality is the Israelis today are conducting the same act against the Palestinians that they suffered themselves in World War II. This is the ultimate irony. Didn't they learn how terrible this was, and how can they in themselves engage in it?
Now they should. Do you think that in some way they should have bust all the Palestinians? The thing is, they didn't bust the Palestinian people out, so I've been told. I mean, so this is all superficial.
Okay.
What do I know?
Yeah.
But they didn't bust them out because they bust them out. The other guys, you know, it's just like if I go into the Vero Mall. And there's a whole group of us, and we shoot up a bunch of people, and then we come in with our green outfits. And we have our berets, blah, 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 blah. What we do is when the police get there, we take off the berets, tuck off them, put on the common people and walk out like this, just like they do in the school. That's why the kids have to walk out like this, because the perpetrators of the crime, all they have to do is change their clothing and walk out like they're one of the students.
His hands up, by the way, for the audience that doesn't have TV.
Oh, I'm sorry about that. Yeah.
Just so you know. There certainly is a problem with identifying who is a Hamas bad guy from who is a innocent civilian. I admit that's a problem.
And Israel gave up the Gaza Strip a few years ago, so there would be peace.
Well, no, they didn't. Actually, they imposed an immediate quarantine on Gaza, and it's been under quarantine.
An immediate quarantine.
Literally.
What kind of a quarantine?
Everything coming in to Gaza is controlled by Israel. You know, this is not new. This so-called embargo of products coming in, it's not new. It's just being more strict and tighter than it was before. And I'll use an example of this. There's an organization within Israel that controls the border into Gaza for humanitarian aid. It's called COGAT. COGAT. Now, COGAT has a commanding general. His name is General Ghazan. And on October 10th, he's the head of humanitarian aid coming into Gaza. He said, this is in a direct quote, human animals will be treated as such. No food, no water in Gaza. There will only be destruction. You wanted hell, you'll get hell. That's the leader of the humanitarian aid program for Israel.
When did he say this?
He said this on October 10th.
Well, maybe because he's privy of knowing what they did to the women and children and families. They burned families together as units.
Okay, the point is—
this is just all coming out now.
Rhett, no, that's been out. A lot of this has been out for a long time.
How about the way that was just out the other day, this whole thing about the women, finding the women with their legs broken and twisted and their genitals filled with blood.
That's been out for a long, long time. Israel is retreading that stuff.
And this was done by Palestinians, not
Israel is retreading that stuff. The war propaganda machine is running full blast.
And so is the other side.
In order to put this out, in order to create what's called a sense of outrage and refocus on the original crime that the Gazans or the Hamas committed.
He tells me to stop being handy.
Yeah, okay, all right.
What do you want me to do, just sit here and just take everything that he says, hook, line, and sinker?
No, okay, come on.
Once he's done.
Yeah.
What?
Okay.
Once he's done.
Yeah.
I can't, what am I going to take copious notes here on everything? He goes from thing to thing to thing to thing to thing. I got to jump in. I can't even remember your name when I'm in a public. If he came into a restaurant now my age, I go, there's my. He's the guy that runs the equipment at the studio. What's his name? Who's the guy that had the big ship? Oh, Noah. That's Noah.
Okay.
I mean, you know, come on.
Yeah, all right. No, you're doing a good job. And the point is—
this is a young man's job. I need to be retired. Somebody send me a check for $10 million, I'm out of here.
All right, let's go back to this COGAT.
Hey, we can shut him up, Al. Uncle Al, inherited $500 million.
Rhett, I just mentioned to you COGAT and this major general who said, you know, if you want hell, you'll get hell.
COGAT. You want hell, you'll get hell.
There's a guy working for this general at COGAT who is the head of what's called the Relief Coordination and Liaison Administration. His name is Colonel Moshe Tetro. Colonel Moshe Tetro. Now, he's
Moshe must be Jew.
So, yeah, of course he is. He's in the IDF, in the Israeli Defense Forces.
Moshe.
All of this is being handled. Moshe. He's working for this general, and he's in charge of distributing food and relief into Gaza.
Yeah.
He has said over and over in the last few weeks, there's no food shortage. He's denying the UN's report and the other international news report that there is a massive food shortage and starvation. In fact, as of yesterday, I believe it was just yesterday, the day before, 12 children in hospitals died of malnutrition, of starvation, malnutrition. Now, the reason why is because they have no milk in the hospitals. And the mothers who are so underfed, they only get one meal a day, they don't have enough milk in their breasts to feed. This is the same thing that's happening, by the way, to polar bears. I want to just point this out.
What do you mean polar bears?
Polar bears are running out of ice. The warming of Antarctica and Arctic Circle is causing these ice to get so thin that they can't go from place to place. They have to swim hundreds of miles sometimes to get from one iceberg to another. And as a result, they're not able to catch enough food to feed themselves. So the mother bears of the polar bears don't have adequate food, and therefore they can't produce enough milk to feed their babies. That's the same thing that's going on in Gaza. The same thing. The mothers don't have the milk because they can't get enough food.
I don't know if I would bring those things up together because there's a lot of people that contest that. And, you know, there are studies that show that people made a whole lot of money. A lot of people made a whole lot of money on this ecology thing, saying that, you know, the warming and all this stuff, that a lot of it's bogus.
Well, they're actually doing scientific studies about the polar bears and looking at the amount of fat they have and because normally polar bears stuff up on fat for the winter, and they are basically losing weight, and they're confirming this. They've lost, you know, like 2% or 3% a year in the last few years of their total weight. And it's because they can't catch enough fish because of the main thing is that because they don't have enough food, they can't produce the milk that they need. And that's what I was trying to explain about this. So Colonel Moshe Tetro is saying, oh, there's no food shortage. He's saying, and this is really, to me, very annoying. He's saying the UN, unfortunately, didn't show up for work today. And he's also saying, oh, the UN needs to hire more people to distribute aid. And this is at the same time that Israel is banning UNRWA.
You're yelling, though.
Okay, sorry. Israel is banning UNRWA. UNRWA is this United Nations.
Everybody seems to yell lately.
No, these are rather disturbing points.
I agree.
You know, they're disturbing points.
Well, you know, I've been in here. I've yelled, too.
Yeah, and Israel is banning UNRWA, which is the main food distribution
network. Israelis dead. I don't want Palestinians dead. I don't like it.
And also, Israel is freezing the bank accounts of UNRWA, so they can't pay for the food that's coming in or the truck drivers that are driving the food in, whatever the reason is. They're obstructing. So they are claiming this Colonel Tetro is claiming there is no food.
Why do you think they're doing that? Take the Israelis.
It's intentional starvation. It's an act of war.
Well, the reason is they're not freezing the bank accounts is because what they think is that Hamas is using all that for— Right?
I think,
you're making this out to be Israel's all 100% wrong. What about the other side of it? Why are they doing the things that they're doing?
Well, last week, you may not have heard about this, but last week there was also a large food delivery convoy.
The stuff that was thrown from above?
No, not from above. We'll get to that in a minute.
Okay.
I'm talking about a large food delivery convoy.
Trucks
in Gaza City.
Okay.
And some starving Palestinians were coming up to the trucks, and the trucks were being—
Oh, I heard that they were shot?
They were shot. 112 of them were shot to death. Most of them were shot to death. The Israelis call it a trampling situation, meaning that the crowd was so desperate for food that they trampled each other, and they were killed by trampling. The reality is the hospitals—
How do we know?
The hospitals have reported that the vast majority of people in the hospitals had gunshot wounds. Okay, and they have video from—
We know that both sides exactly—
And they have video, showing guys on tanks with machine guns firing. These red, strafe shots going over the heads and all over the area.
Would you say that all these years before all this happened, October 7th, that Hamas was a sort of a thorn in the side to Israel? I mean, they're always— building up the threat and everything. I mean, in other words, what I'm getting to is, okay, so you've got a Netanyahu who is what do you call him? Do you call them an eagle? What do you call— You have the dove of peace and you have an eagle, right, in America? During Vietnam— A hawk. Okay, hawk. So he's a hawk. Okay. So, because I've always been suspect, and maybe this doesn't mean anything, but I always was wondering why it took 18 to 24 hours for the Israelis to respond at all to protect their people on the boundary over there, almost as if, and then remember, I mean, there were just things, this is just conjecture on my part, but finally they said, look, it's kind of like somebody starts giving you money or ammo because you hate Rhett. And they start giving you stuff, so you start, spending spitballs over to me.
Yeah.
What am I going to do? I'm going to get ticked off and have a fight. So, did they feed Hamas secretly? I mean, nothing's beyond the evil of man, as far as I'm concerned.
Yeah.
Feed them so they would have this attack, and then Netanyahu could say, "Now we will decimate you."
That's certainly a plausible scenario. It would be a horrible thing if it were the case. To sacrifice these—
Because you got to remember, there's the Palestinian people, good people. Remember, my grandfather was a world traveler.
Yeah.
He said, mankind, you know this, you lived in Ukraine, you lived in South Korea, you lived in Spain, you lived where else?
Pakistan.
Did you find human beings are just— I've traveled around the world, not as much as you, but—
Yeah.
Mankind, lovely. I meet Muslims. They pray, "Hi, my brother. Yeah. How are you today? Peace, peace, salama, whatever." And so you've got the good people. Okay, you got the good Palestinians. You got the good Israelis, you've got the good Americans. People, we the people, don't want war. Then you've got people who are over here who are the extreme doves who just don't care if they're walked on. Then you've got the hawks over here. We've always had the hawks. I mean, nobody wants to talk about it. I guess it's starting now, but I got to tell you, for 29 years I've been on the radio. Do you think I talked about Vietnam with any... Every time I see a Vietnam veteran, I have to say, hi, thank you for serving. But I go, how many cars are not out there this morning and people driving around? They were killed needlessly. We had no business being in Vietnam. And it's the evil of man, right?
Well,
Now, John Michael Matthews over here just sold closed up a shop. He was a Marine.
I know him.
He put his life on the line for us. And he got really perturbed with me because he says, you don't help your neighbor?
Yeah.
And he considered the, what is it?
The Vietnamese.
Who were the commies? The North Vietnam?
The Viet Cong,
The North. So the South.
South Vietnamese.
So we were there to defend our brothers, supposedly.
And he bought into this, as a individual soldier on the ground, they need to believe in what they're doing. Yeah. And they need to, if their government says this is the right thing to do, they need to believe.
Especially when your best friend Joe was just shot through the head.
Yeah, exactly. So I'm not going to challenge them individually in their sincere effort.
They put their life up.
But that's one of the reasons why I went into diplomacy.
They wrote a blank check to America.
Yeah, I went into diplomacy because, like you, I'm against wars.
Yeah.
I think wars are the failure of peace, the failure of negotiations. We're going to talk about that coming up. We're going to talk about the whole concept of war and declarations of war.
Now, you mentioned about these guns this morning. Remember you talked about ammo?
The ammo, yeah.
What's the ammo?
Ammo. It's a 155 millimeter tank shells.
You do realize there's a guy that had a restaurant right here.
Yeah.
He just was playing with a restaurant. He lost all kinds of money. It took him years. He finally sold out and got out of it.
Yeah.
Now, I have to say, he told me, I said, where'd you make all your money? He said he had contracts with the U.S. military. There's people right now that are making a whole lot of wealth. Isn't it sick?
Yeah. Well,
ammo. I own an ammo. I'm friends with Biden. Oh, let's pick on Biden. He's running for office. So let's put him aside. How about other senators and stuff? You know what I mean? I mean, we just found out this other lady is in Maine. She just ran as a senator. She came in. She was worth $300,000. She's now worth $40 million. You know why? If you're a member of the Congress or you're a senator, you are privy to information that's going on with stocks and stuff, and they know where to invest the money. And it's completely legal, and they're raping the American people.
Yeah. Well, as we've said on the
show. When will there be justice?
As we've said on the show before,
I hope that Trump wins. You know what I hope he does? I hope at the end of his life, he's eaten well his whole life. And wouldn't it be great if he just came clean and said, we're going to clean it up. I'm going to tell you everything that's going on.
As I said.
Let's take the thieves out and put them in the guillotines.
General Eisenhower became president. President Ike. I like Ike.
Yeah,
I do like Ike. And one of the things he did not go in and become a billionaire by profiteering from the military-industrial complex. He warned America that we have to be careful not to let them start steering us into wars that we don't need to be in.
Because he's also the guy that came up on the Jews. What do you call it? Gestapo? What's the what are those places called?
Dachau or
He came upon those and all these dying people, and he said, "All you cameramen, take pictures. You film guys, film this," because he said, "quote unquote, the future president of the United States, the general who was a real general, bona fide general, said, because some son of a bitch is going to come along." His quote, folks.
Yeah.
Some son of a bitch is going to come along in the future and say this didn't happen. And that has happened.
And the point I'm trying to make today.
So this guy was one of us.
The point I'm trying to make, I have great admiration for him. The point I'm trying to make today is that Israel today is engaging in the same kind of atrocities the Nazis were doing by starving the population, a civilian population of Gaza that is reprehensible. It is inexcusable.
I understand, but what about what the reprehensible stuff that the
it's not what about. I don't want to hear what about. I'm saying take an individual act. Okay. You're talking about 2 million people living there, 2 million, and you are starving to death. These people are literally eating animal feed because they can't get any food. Now, the U.S., as you mentioned earlier in the show, the U.S. has started, as of the last few days, to drop airlift meals ready to eat, halal style.
Yeah, but I saw one man on the Gaza Strip, and he says, this is the meal. We have one meal here. How am I going to feed my family of nine with this
Of course.
Meal?
The point is that one of these—
We can only throw so much off of those planes. It's not a whole lot.
Correct. That's why I want to point out something that we could be
Let
doing.
Let the trucks come in.
No. We could be doing something else.
What?
Letting the trucks come in would, of course, require Israel's permission.
Yes.
And Israel's getting—
Okay. And what else can we do?
And Israel's getting the protesters from blocking the trucks, which is what's going on right now. Israeli protesters are blocking the trucks crossing the border at Camel Crossing. They're standing there, even though it's considered a military—
But they're demanding that the hostages be returned, then they'll let the food in,
is what
they're saying,
right? Okay, then how about this as an alternative?
Yes.
Until they get out of the way—
You're yelling again, though.
Until they get out of the way,
yes.
No food for the hostages. Why not? If you're not letting food come into Gaza, you're trying to starve the Gaza population.
I think they pretty much were starved.
No, they weren't starved. They've been fed very well— Mostly.
Now that's not true.
Look,
they were not fed very well. They were fed.
The Palestinians understand that keeping the hostages alive is valuable for them because these are valuable
trading
ships.
That's why they took them in the first place.
That's right. So it does not benefit them to have the hostages.
After they murdered and burned to death families.
Okay, it doesn't benefit them to have the hostages die. But in this case, what I'm saying is why is it okay for Israel to starve civilians in Palestine?
Okay.
Let them die of starvation. Literally, they are dying.
Why is it okay for Hamas to come on October 7th?
Now, wait a minute. No.
Now,
keep in mind the parallel here. Why is it okay for Israel? It's not a crime for Israel to starve the Palestinians, civilians, but it would be a terrible atrocity for the Palestinians to starve the hostages.
You would think that would
because
be
those are Israelis.
You're talking about tit for tat, eye for eye.
I know.
And an eye for eye makes everybody blind in the end.
And the reality is the Israelis do not see the Palestinians as human beings. They see them as subhumans. That's why they don't think anything about starving them to death. Just get them out of the way. They're just dust. They should be scattered into the wind. That's unfortunately—
There is vitriol—
There's a lot of vitriol
on both sides.
Yeah, no, but especially on that side. Now, getting
now,
food.
Especially on what side?
For,
there's been vitriol on both sides.
Okay, Israel is attempting to starve to death 2 million people, and it's actually succeeding right now. It's getting very critical. So that's why Biden has decided to start dropping out of the air. But
no,
those are little.
Biden started to do that because he wants to maybe win the election.
But he understands.
You heard what happened in Michigan, right?
Yeah, I did.
I mean,
and
he
I don't
lost
want,
a bunch of votes.
Yeah, and he lost them because of his position on being a blind follower. A blind follower of Israel's dictator, Netanyahu. That's what it amounts to. Netanyahu is.
But there is a history here. Remember, even Nixon said, we will never let Israel down because they're our only flagship in that entire area that promotes democracy.
They're not promoting democracy. This is the irony of the whole thing. Under the so-called the bills
wait,
that have been—
There is democracy in Israel. 40% of the population, whatever it is, happens to be Palestinian. Muslims.
No, it's not.
And they're
20%.
Treated with evil.
No, it's
not. Equal.
They're not treated equally, and there is not— There may be some form of democracy for Israelis, Jews, living in Israel.
You know what the problem with when you do research? If I came to your house and I was looking over your shoulder.
Yeah.
I go and let's take the Palestinian side.
Yeah.
Okay, and the Hamas.
Right.
By the time I get done there, we're 2 hours in.
Right.
I'm going to be, Israel's not wrong. But then I got to go back and study the Israel side. And if I do that equally, which is very hard to do, but if you do it equally, they're saying, I hate Hamas. I mean, how do you keep a balance when you're doing, and I admire, look at the research. I mean, this is the research he does, folks.
Yeah.
This is underlining, highlighting, he sends in questions, he goes, all this stuff is done. You spend hours and hours, and there's even handwritten notes and everything. I mean, this is admirable, and my little show's not deserving of this.
Yeah.
You know?
Well, but our
Some
audience—
Some producers should pick us up.
Our audience is. And the last thing I want to say about this—
Our little audience, but yeah. I wish we could. You never know. You can make a difference.
Yeah. The last thing I want to mention about, you know, Israel's adopting the Nazi hunger plan. That's essentially—
The Nazi hunger plan.
The Nazi hunger plan that killed millions of Jews in World War II. Israel's doing the same
thing. How did they starve them then?
Well, they
in Dachau, you mean?
No, it wasn't. This was beyond that. They had ghettos, and they basically just limited the supplies of food into the ghettos.
And people were dying.
And people were dying. Yeah, they were dying because they couldn't get enough to eat. Yeah. Now, what we should be doing now, but Biden is dropping some token air shipments. It's good. It's a start. The air shipments. The French are doing it. The British are doing it. The Jordanians were doing it a while back. So that's a good start. But the big way to bring in the food without having to confront the Israelis directly is by ship. And we have right now off the coast of Gaza a major amphibious landing fleet. The USS Bataan is out off the coast of Gaza. They could load up that amphibious. You know, these are these troop carriers that drop down the flap, and then the troops come running off, and they drive the tanks off and all that. You remember World War II?
Yeah.
Okay, landing at Saipan and all that.
10 times each.
We have ships like that. Yeah. And guess what? They can bring in, instead of bringing in tanks, they could bring in food supplies from Cyprus. Cyprus could be – it's not very far from Cyprus to Israel, okay?
And Cyprus is Greek, right?
Cyprus is Greek. Yeah,
I haven't been.
It's actually an independent country. Part of Cyprus is Greece. Northern Cyprus is part of Greece. There's a dispute between Greece and Turkey. But
Turkey is suggesting that they own part of Cyprus.
Yeah, but in
there's
reality,
conflicts everywhere.
Well, that's been a
Does
frozen.
Does anybody get along?
That's been a frozen conflict. So what I'm trying to say is that we could be providing troop transport ships sailing from Cyprus, loaded up with all the goodies. That we need big ships and landing them right onto the shores of Gaza, and then from there quickly bringing it to distribution points. Now the problem, a lot of people have argued. I've looked into this. Are saying, well, we don't want to get U.S. troops on the ground, and so the question then is, well, can you get U.S. And they're saying, oh, we're worried that Hamas might fire at our ships. Wait a minute. These are bringing in food supplies for the Palestinian people. Do you think Hamas is going to fire on them?
Well, because Hamas is going to take a lot of the food for themselves. They're going to be eating well, too.
Well, the Hamas is a small amount of the 2 million people.
Let's say this. Let's say the Israelis are right that if you give food to the Palestinians there,
then Hamas will eat.
Okay, so.
So what?
What's so bad about Hamas being well-fed?
Yeah, exactly.
You know, you can still go in and kill them.
Yes, exactly.
You kill fat Hamas as well as skinny Hamas.
Exactly. You got it right. There's no point.
And it's going to trickle down, and the people that are being held against their will be fed.
Right.
Who are imprisoned. What do you call
exactly.
it? Hostages.
Hostages, right.
I mean, so, and...
So depriving...
Who's losing their humanity over this?
That's,
both sides.
Well, in this case, though, I think Israel is definitely on the wrong side of...
But do you know that Israel has never called for the death of all the Palestinians? But the Palestinians have said, we want to annihilate Israel. Israel just wants to live in peace.
Okay. If you want to look at the
if Arafat had accepted it way back when, would this be happening?
The International Court of Justice.
He was a representative of the Palestinians.
Yeah, the International Court of Justice has said.
Israel said, here, this will be your land, this will be our land.
You say Israel wants to live in peace, but the International Court of Justice has said that there is preliminary evidence that Israel is engaged in genocide. That is not living in peace. When you're engaging in genocide, you're not living in peace.
But who wants to threaten genocide all the time?
Well, what you're saying is that Hamas has said they want to threaten genocide against the
Israelis. So is Iran. Iran said we want to wipe the Israelis off the face of the earth.
Well, Iran has some credibility in making that threat. Hamas doesn't.
What do you mean credibility?
Iran has a big army and lots of missiles. They could blow up a large
and
part.
And you wouldn't believe how many. I mean,
they could blow up a lot of Israel. And so, frankly, so could Hezbollah. I don't want to get into that today, but there's Israel and Hezbollah are escalating step by step. It's getting worse and worse.
So tell me something.
Yeah.
So I'm the head dude of Iran right now. I'm a Khomeini.
Ayatollah. Yeah.
So why don't I say, well, they're weakened. Why not attack now with fury?
Well, actually, it's not. That's not the calculation.
Is it because the
calculation is Benjamin Netanyahu is saying, I'm not beating Hamas. There's no way I'm going to totally eliminate Hamas. The war in Gaza is going badly. I'm not going to be able to exploit Rafah.
Is he saying this?
He's thinking it. This is my interpretation. And Netanyahu is saying if the war goes badly and we end up having a ceasefire or a permanent ceasefire, then I'm going to be out on the street and be in jail. That's what I, as Benjamin, am thinking. So my goal is don't stop the war. What the defense minister, Gallant, said just recently when they were talking about a ceasefire, which Biden suggested would happen this week. It's not going to happen, but he suggested it should happen this week before Ramadan. Gallant said, well, if we have a ceasefire with the Hamas, that does not mean that we are going to have a ceasefire with Hezbollah. Mm-hmm. So basically he's saying, well, even if we stop the war temporarily with Gaza, we're going to continue fighting against Hezbollah. And he's saying until we can clear a massive area of land north of the border of Israel from Hamas. So he's basically saying that Hamas has no right to live inside Lebanon. They have to be, you know, 50 miles away from the border. And therefore, Israel is essentially declaring security perimeter lines inside Lebanon, okay, and saying, these are the guys that are allowed to live in your country, and these are the guys that aren't allowed to live in your country. Can you imagine that? Think of what would happen if somebody told you, you know, that on the Mexican border, the Mexicans are going to say, well, 50 miles inside the United States, we'll let you live, but if you're less than 50 miles, you can't live there. I mean, that's infringement on sovereignty. So, you know, these are some of the issues that we're dealing with. I want to shift over. Maybe we take a break and then we'll shift over to the
I
got to
put the air
topic.
Conditioning down.
Yeah, but this is—
Who put my air conditioning up?
Yeah.
All right, so we're
discussion.
Trying to save the world here today.
Yeah.
And you wonder what the fruition is, but I will tell you this. We should do a study on this too.
Yeah.
You never know who's listening to this.
Right. Well, I hope you Biden know. Is listening or one of his—
I would doubt that.
Administration.
But you never know whose ear you have.
Yeah.
Because how many things, and if I could ever hire Noah on the side to do some research, how many people have been elected into office by one vote? How many things, like for instance, I was told when I was younger that we were going to have either German or English as our language in America.
Yeah.
And it was by one vote, English won out. I was also told it was by one vote that Hitler got into the inner circle, one vote.
Yeah.
Okay. So, and there's all kinds of historic situations where one vote made the difference. So to sit down and lay down arms and go, oh, well, we can't make any difference at all.
Yeah.
Well, at least we're trying here.
Yeah. Well, Mayorkas got impeached by one vote.
Who's Mayorkas?
The Homeland Security Secretary.
He got what? Impeached?
He got
impeached. Right, recently.
Yeah, one vote.
Oh, yeah, the Mayorkas guy. Yeah, that guy. I don't know.
That Not
guy.
That it makes a difference, but it was one vote.
Let's take everything aside. Do
one
you like
vote.
That guy? I don't like that guy. Just like, you know who the guy just retired, the Republican guy?
Mitch McConnell.
I never liked him. He was on my show. I left. I didn't want to interview him, so I left him here with Joseph, and then he got ticked off at Joe 45 minutes in. He goes, I wanted to talk about my book. He was there to promote his book, and Joseph was really getting in on him and some stuff. I've never liked that guy. I don't like that guy, too, that guy who's Mayorkas. There's just something about it. Would you want to maybe I'm wrong. I mean, if you invited me to his house, I'd like to go to his house, see what he's really like.
Right.
It just seems there's something there. And you know what? And I'm in touch with my feminine side, so I have an intuition. But generally, I'm right about people.
All right. Well, next thing we're going to talk about after the break, just as a teaser, is did Trump break international law by establishing the U.S. embassy in Jerusalem?
Oh, brother. Yeah, jeez. Oh, give me a break.
Give me a break. Okay. We're off.
It's been a hard day's night.
Huh?
What?
Oh, you got to hit the ads.
Why don't you control the ads in there? Isn't that the way it's supposed to? All right, and we're back, ladies and gentlemen. How you doing? I'm Rhett Palmer.
And I'm David Hunter.
David Hunter. David Hunter's a former U.S. diplomat. And I'm currently writing a book on diplomacy.
A book on being nice. How about that?
We should be diplomatic towards each other. Is that
we
not
are.
Dignity?
We are, for the
no,
most
No, I don't
part.
Mean just you and I. I'm talking about the whole world.
You should.
Let's start, even here in the United States, the left and the right, why can't we all talk?
Right.
I have some very extreme left friends call me the other night, and they said, I was too tired, but she says, Rhett, we're just concerned, you know, he's a former Catholic. got married to his wife, you know, left being an active priest, I guess, in 60, and they live up in Vermont.
Okay.
Where, of course, where Trump lost, and I have a lot of friends that are lefties up there, and they want to know. And it's like I was too tired the other night. I said I just can't get into the whole thing, but because Trump scares the death out of them.
Yeah.
But then again, you know, I understand the other side. People need to understand the other side. Biden and the people that are in office. I'm just not sure how many thieves. Bad people we have really
right, we
are
talking
in office
about,
who are self-serving, right?
Yeah, we were talking about before the break this next topic, which is Trump. Did Trump break the law?
Did Trump break the law
when he moved the embassy, the U.S. embassy to Jerusalem? Now everybody's heard about that. That was done in 20.
Isn't it funny though?
2017.
They keep trumping up charges on Trump.
Well, let me explain this.
It's funny that he has that name. And that it's just the first president ever. You have to admit that. This is historic.
Yeah. First one named Trump. Yeah.
Yeah. The first one named Trump and the first one that trumped up all these trumped up things.
Yeah.
Only in third world nations do they come against and weaponize the government to come against. I mean, you know, I'm sorry, Biden's the president, so the buck stops with him, and they have weaponized the FBI and the CIA.
Okay. Well, let's go back. Stay on the focus of moving the embassy to Jerusalem because that's
important.
I know
how we can get some attention.
Yeah.
FBI, CIA, CIA. No, they'll tune in. Hey, it's coming up on the computer. Some guy's up in Florida there, and he's talking about FBI and CIA. We got to listen in here, Al.
Okay. Well, anyway, what happened was in 1980. What happened in 1980 was what was called the Jerusalem Law.
Jerusalem Law.
Now, the Jerusalem Law was passed by Israel, and it essentially said, we are unifying West Jerusalem and East Jerusalem. Now, in 1967, those guidelines with a green line dividing Palestine and Israel, Jerusalem was split in half. There was East Jerusalem and West Jerusalem. Jerusalem was not a united city. It was divided. It's a divide. And by international law today, it is still considered to be a divided city, subject to the final resolution of a peace treaty and a establishment of a Palestinian state.
Mm-hmm.
That's why the Palestinians claim that they will have their capital in Jerusalem, because they have in the 67 borders, East Jerusalem, including the Al-Aqsa Mosque and the Temple Mount, all of that is in East Jerusalem, which is Palestinian designated territory. Now, what happened in 1980 is that the Israelis said, well, to hell with that. We're just going to take over Jerusalem. It's all going to become one. United Jerusalem is Israel's God-given capital. Well, what happened as a result was the UN Security Council, 15 people, 15 countries, they had a vote, 14-0, with the U.S. abstaining, which denounced this claim of unity of Jerusalem. They said that this is an alteration of the character and status of the holy city of Jerusalem and does not have any legal validity. It's a flagrant violation of the Fourth Geneva Convention and a serious obstacle to lasting peace in the region. That's what the United Nations Security Council resolution that was voted 14-0 declared. So, in effect, the Israelis were already breaking the law by claiming that that was their territory. Now, what happened after that is Israel decided, well, hey, we're going to build a wall around East Jerusalem. I've showed you that map of several weeks ago. And
I've been there.
And East Jerusalem, which is Palestinian territory, supposed to be part of the West Bank, the Israelis started building a wall in East Jerusalem, separating that East Jerusalem from the rest of the West Bank, and claiming that all of that East Jerusalem territory is actually Israeli territory. It's not part of the disputed or to-be-established state of Israel. So if—
You know, let's just say for a second—
Yeah.
Just take it my way, and that is that God gave Israel to the Jews a long time ago with Moses and all those other guys coming across the desert, okay? So, and the Jews have never been a fighting kind of people. They've always been, you know, they're...
What about Moses? They fought their way, Jericho, the Battle of Jericho. They took over all that area. They defeated all the Canaanites.
Moses did?
Well, Moses, and what was the guy that was with Moses?
Joshua.
Joshua, yeah. Joshua was the commander of the army.
He's the one who said, we can take these giants. The others came back and said, we can't fight them.
Yeah,
and Joshua and Caleb came back
saying, we can take them. Five Palestinian kingdoms at the time.
Well, there's so much to keep up with all this, you know.
Yeah.
But what, I mean, look, if you have cancer.
Okay, I know, cut it out, yeah.
No. Let's say well, we're only going to cut out half of it.
Right.
You're going to die. So a long time ago, I mean, it's just like when I flew in naively as the uneducated guy that I am. I fly in because I had a miraculous encounter with Jesus. I get born again. The children of this age are wiser than the children of the age to come. I'm a child of the age to come. I get into Jerusalem and all of a sudden I hear, I go, what the heck is that? Oh, that's the Muslims. What are they doing here? I thought this was Jewish land.
Well, it was only...
Wouldn't it have been better way back when they should have just said, look, we're dominating it and we're taking over, but it's not that simple.
See, it was not Jewish land until 1947. That's
well,
the problem.
It wasn't before that, but then they were run out.
400 AD okay, was the last time that the Jews were really dominant.
Well, you want to go back into everybody's history?
Yeah.
Or how old are we as a country?
Yeah.
How old?
220 years, something like that.
I think that the American Indians really own this land. I mean, honestly, no, if you want to play that game, that if that's the rules to the game, then I think that...
We've talked about this before about, you know, Israel and Israelis and the Zionist movement in particular, coming over to Israel and setting up in Israel and Jerusalem. Those are called the religious Zionists. The secular Zionists were willing to have a place after World War II with all the slaughter and the Holocaust, horrible Holocaust that went on. 6 million Jews killed.
And the Jews offered
they
to have
needed,
50-50 with that other guy.
No, but before that, there was actually proposals.
Yeah.
Believe it or not, there was a proposal. I made this jokingly, but Galveston, Texas was actually proposed as a location for a new Jewish Holy Land for the Jews.
God says, you think so? My Israel, you can keep Texas. Why don't you take the Muslims down there? We don't want Texas. My exes live in Texas.
And as I said, somewhat jokingly, if the Israelis, there are only 7 million of them living over
can
there.
Can you imagine with the cowboy hats? Oy vey, oy vey, I'm riding my horse today.
And actually, the Hasidic Jews have the nice big brimmed hats, too. They fit right in with the cowboys.
They blend
in there. You know.
Hey, Daddy, what are those other cowboys?
And they all like guns. They're already gun lovers, the Israelis. The Israelis are gun lovers.
They are not gun lovers.
So therefore—
They've had to protect themselves.
And therefore the Texans would get along very well.
Do you know well. Any Jews?
The Texans
would
get—
Do you want to go out with my Jewish— Let's call my Jewish friends right now. I'll call 10 of them.
I bet they all
do
have
Do you
guns.
Know how to run a gun? I bet you Howie Schaefer doesn't have a gun, nor does he know how to
shoot. Have you heard of IDF? IDF is mandatory for all Israeli
young because they've had to protect
men
themselves.
And women. Therefore, they all have gun knowledge of guns.
Why?
Why? Because they located themselves in an area where they weren't wanted, the middle of the Middle East. They fought by
actually, it was Britain that did that.
No, Britain didn't want them there, to be honest. That's false, too.
My gosh, the whole thing is false.
No, it's not. But the irony is people tend to think that, the Britons wanted the Israelis to go to Israel, to Jerusalem.
Then how did it happen?
Well,
who established, was it 1949 or 48?
The country was established in 48, 49. Yeah. And before that, you had essentially groups that were terrorists, Jewish terrorist groups like Irgun and the Stern Gang that were fighting against the British.
This is getting very complex.
They were fighting against the British. They engaged in terrorist warfare against the British. Because the British did not want them
and
to.
And the British were not terrorists when they came into all these places in the world? The sun will never set on the British Empire.
Okay.
Remember that whole thing?
You do have a point there in that the British were what was called colonials. And colonials, when they come into a country, they usually come in with guns.
Hey, look how stupid they were in South Africa. When I went to Zimbabwe, I've been there. You've been to Africa? I've been to Zimbabwe.
Yeah.
Okay? The people there have to wait in line at night to get on buses, literally 4, 5, 7 blocks long. They don't get home till 11 o'clock at night. Then they have to get up at 4 in the morning to get on the buses where the lines to bring them back in. Everything was – Mugabe didn't know what the hell he was doing because the Brits did not teach – the black people there, the indigenous people, how to have, administrative skills.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's why they took my friends. My friends had a farm there, 300-year-old farm in Zimbabwe.
Right.
And they came along and said, if you can prove, if you're African heritage, you're black, and you can prove that your granddad worked on this place for a month, we're going to take the keys away from the white folks, and we're going to give you the farm, which is what they did to my friend Kevin and his family.
Noah, can you look up, is Rhodesia...
Rhodesia.
Was that that Zimbabwe was Rhodesia?
Yes.
Was Rhodesia?
You don't have to look it up.
Was that a German occupied colony?
Oh, Rhodesia sounds
as opposed to British. You said the Brits.
Okay, look up Rhodesia.
I think it's German. I think it was a German colony. It was not a British colony. The British did a lot of damage there.
I will tell you this though, even though the Brits had left. Or whoever it was that left Zimbabwe.
The Germans, maybe.
And you could see where the beautiful roads used to be, but it was all overgrown. And it's like, you know, the natives didn't know how to take care of things, so it was kind of rough. But I will say this. There was a fragrance. Maybe it's because of a lack of industry, but there was a fragrance of fresh, clean air and freedom. I loved being in Zimbabwe. I can understand why, as a British young man, if I'd gone to Israel, I mean, not Israel,
Africa.
But Africa, man, I tell you.
It was British. Rhodesia was British. Okay.
Oh, it was British. Okay.
Okay. All right. Anyway, let me move on to this point about
the thing
Trump.
About all this is that this is all for us.
Yeah.
It is, there is a form of entertainment here.
Education.
Education is entertainment.
I want the audience to be entertained. The audience, if you're learning something, that's incidental. But be entertained.
Yeah, the greatest time I've had in my life in the past 5 years was going back to school for a year and a half and being on the dean's list.
Yeah.
I didn't even care about my grades. I had a blast, man.
Yeah.
But what bothers me about this is the atrocity is that we are flippantly talking about lives in the balance.
Yeah.
And we're just sitting here going, oh, let's have another cup of coffee.
Well,
and after this, we'll go to there's 15,000 fast food places in America. And look at me, I'm fat and overweight, and I'm an American, spoiled.
Yeah.
People are starving. I mean, you know.
I had a really macabre, I hope the audience knows what that word means, macabre, idea.
What does your mean? Oh, I know macabre means, but I'll say, hey, Siri, what does macabre mean? Oh, shoot. She's going to say it in my earphones. I'll read it. Disturbing and horrifying because of involvement or depiction of death.
Yeah. Yes.
It's like when you see a Halloween movie, usually it's macabre.
Yeah, I had a macabre thought.
Yes.
The Americans dealing with this weight problem that they all have, that they should, the Palestinians should set up weight loss camps in Gaza.
It's a very bad sense of humor. That's not good. Oh, my God. Where are you going, Rhett? I'm going to the Palestinian camp to lose weight. Not funny.
All right. I told you it was macabre. It's a dark sense of humor.
Horrible, dark. Oh, my God. And there's some guy watching this right now going, hey, Horace, I think I got a great idea for another movie.
All right. Anyway, let me just go back to this. I mentioned that the United Nations in 1980 had passed this UN
don't you ever feel guilty though? That
Security
we
Council
sit here with such flippancy?
No, UN Security Council
and
resolution
people starving,
14
dying,
to nothing.
It's like, well,
now,
what can we do?
And that Israel then later on built a wall all the way around Palestine. Jerusalem. And then what happened in 2017, December 2017, is Trump declared that he was going to move the U.S. embassy. Now,
because Obama said he was going to.
No. Wait.
Also, Bush said he was going to. Clinton said he was going
to.
Yes, they did.
Rhett, we are members of the United Nations, and we have to abide by United Nations Security Council resolutions.
They all said they were going to do this. They were going to attempt to do it, and they didn't. Why?
Because it's illegal, that's why. Because somebody told them, their lawyers told them, you're violating a U.N. Security Council.
Well, then how did Trump get away with it?
He violated a Security Council resolution.
There again!
That's what I'm telling you.
Arrest that guy!
You've got a U.N. Security Council, not just the U.N. General Assembly, but the U.N. Security Council.
Who cares if it's in Jerusalem? What's the difference?
Wait a minute. It makes a big difference.
Tell me what.
It makes a big difference.
I don't understand this.
Okay. Let's use an example. When Trump opened the embassy in Jerusalem,
He
was one of probably only two or three at most that have embassies there. I don't even think we might have been the only one to have an embassy there. Because remember, in 1980, they were told, if you have established diplomatic missions to Jerusalem, you must withdraw those missions.
Why?
To Jerusalem. Because the Jerusalem is a disputed city. It's not the capital of Israel. You don't have the right to set up your embassy in a disputed area when it's not the capital. But Israel is saying, I don't care what the U.N. says. To hell with the U.N. To hell with the General Assembly.
Well,
to hell with
the
Security
UN
Council.
To dictate what a country should do?
Well, that's a good point. And we'll get to that as our next topic.
See that there? I know something there.
No, that's a good topic because What you're saying is maybe we should just all ignore the U.N. We don't need the U.N. International law, who gives a damn?
Has the U.N. accomplished anything of any value?
Has the U.N. accomplished anything? I would say this. We had, before the war, World War II, we had something called the League of Nations. The League of Nations was promoted by Woodrow Wilson. He was the one who was so-called the godfather of that idea. And his point was after World War I, where he had had a horrible war, world war, He thought, well, let's get all the countries together and have them talk about things and have peaceful resolution of things rather than fighting wars all the time. That's what Woodrow Wilson proposed. Mm-hmm. And actually, after World War I, they decided to do that. So they established the League of Nations. Well, guess what? The United Nations the League of Nations was established, but the United States did not join the League of Nations, even though Woodrow Wilson's the one who proposed this whole organization. And why? Because Henry Cabot Lodge, he said, I don't want to compromise American sovereignty to a bunch of international laws. So the League of Nations was limping along without the United States as a member. And after a while, Germany and Japan dropped out. They were members. And they dropped out and they said, we can do what we want. We don't need to follow the law of international law. The United States isn't even a member. Why should we be obliged to obey international law?
Mm-hmm.
And guess what? Once Japan and Germany were out of the League of Nations, then they decided, we can invade whoever the hell we want. The law of war does not restrict us from taking over some country if we just feel like it. So you basically abolished what's called the international law and went back to the law of the jungle, that the strongest guy can take whatever he wants whenever he wants. Now, we've been living with the United Nations since World War II. What happened after World War II? We realized, hey, that League of Nations, if it had been properly funded and supported, it might have helped preserve the peace. And it has. For the last 70 years or 75 years, we've had the United Nations, and most conflicts have been avoided. We have not had a lot of countries invading other countries' territory like you saw prior to that time. For the most part, sovereignty and territorial integrity has been honored. I'm not saying it's perfect, and I understand there are areas where it doesn't work. But in terms of what's called the right to wage war, the United Nations established that no nation has the right to wage war except for self-defense and when acting under a national, a UN national security resolution.
Well, you're the one that says that Hamas's act on October 7th was not an act of war.
Right. Let me just make
this. And I disagree. And so,
I know.
And Israel agrees with me.
Yeah, but let me clarify. For example, the U.S. attacked Iraq.
Excuse me.
You remember the Iraq war? We went
I
in
agree
and
with
took,
Israel.
Threw out, we threw out Saddam Hussein, Iraq.
Yeah.
Okay. We did not do that just because we felt like it. We did not do that because he was harboring weapons of mass destruction.
Mm.
We did that under a UN Security Council resolution. Remember, George Bush got up there and he waited until the vote was done at the UN Security Council. That's when he got the green light to go into Iraq. They waited. They had to.
Well, that was a big mistake.
It was, but the point is, he did it legally. He did not invade another country.
Let's go back in time.
Yeah.
So we got this guy Hussein. Now, I don't know about you. I bet you were bullied as a kid because you're a short guy, right? Were you not bullied?
Not very often.
Okay, well, maybe not. Maybe you were a tough guy because the kid that used to bully me was a short kid. I'm a big tall kid. You know what I mean? So maybe you were a bully.
No, I wasn't a bully, but I didn't get bullied very much.
Well, I got bullied.
Yeah.
I don't like bullies.
I don't either.
You know, and so the first thing I would have done then there is go and take Hussein and his sons and put a bullet in their heads. I could, if I could see what they actually did and know it in my heart, I could pull the trigger. Okay. So anyway, so I'm glad we got rid of Hussein. But Hussein was some kind of a weird, oppressive, dictatorial genius because he had the Sunnis and the Shiites all living together. Everybody was doing, you know, okay, rah, 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 rah.
Yeah.
You stop it or you're going to, we're going to hang you. And there was peace in Iraq, right?
It was.
But I mean, if you didn't give a good deal on one of his sons buying a car, they'd find your body in the trunk of a car in the water the next day, you know.
Yeah.
So they were evil, evil, evil people, correct?
Well, I certainly.
Hussein.
Agree that he and the sons were. Brutal dictators. I'm not sure that the UN and the United States had the...
Him and Gaddafi, these people think they're impervious.
Well, you
do they
let me just say this.
There's going to be a day of reckoning?
Nobody appointed you as sheriff of the world.
That's right.
Okay?
Me,
so
Red Palmer.
You, Red Palmer. And
yeah.
And to be honest, nobody appointed the United States as sheriff of the world.
Yeah, I'm getting sick and tired of that, sending our boys and girls over there dying.
Therefore, the concept of a just war is self-defense...
Self-defense.
Or under a UN Security Council resolution.
Mm-hmm. So, okay, well, Israel at the beginning of this October said that was self-defense.
Well, the question now of self-defense, and this is why I mentioned this, you know, the Palestinians and Hamas and the fact, was that a waged war or not, is whether or not you as a... As what I call if you're practicing unnecessary force and violating another state's right to self-determination, you cannot claim self-defense when they respond. So if Israel was violating Palestine's right to self-defense, right to self-determination and sovereignty, and they responded back in a negative way, like that attack on the kibbutz.
And raping women and burning children and mothers and dads
together. In other words, the concept of self-defense, if you are violating somebody to begin with and they fight back at you, that does not mean that you have the right to self-defense against them because you were the original aggressor.
The Israelis were not in there pulling
the triggers. Israelis were the original aggressor. That's the concept.
We're talking about shooting and killing.
The Israelis have been shooting and killing Palestinians inside the occupied territories for 30 years.
How have they been getting away with that?
How do they get away with it? That's exactly a good question. Why is it that because Israel has not had anyone hold them account. They have not been held account. This so-called Operation Cast Lead in 2009 was actually war crimes were committed and the U.S. and the international community refused to investigate, and Israel covered it up. So they have been committing crimes against the Palestinians for years and years. This book, Son of Hamas, for example, he describes how he was grabbed out of a car and beat by a rifle butt and thrown into jail and strapped into a prison chair for weeks at a time in a stress position. Now, why is Israel allowed to do that? Who's policing Israel's violations of international law? The reality is nobody. And that's the problem we've had. That was the problem with the League of Nations, too. If there's nobody enforcing the law, the so-called international law, then before long people start ignoring the international law. That's what I'm worried about. I'm worried that Israel right now is attacking the United Nations, saying that it's a bunch of, you know, anti-Semites. The reality is the United Nations has voted against Israel. You know, Netanyahu made a claim just recently when Trump declared the embassy. This is kind of humorous. Trump declared the embassy and the United Nations held their own vote. And they concluded that Trump's action was illegal. And Netanyahu comes back and says, well... You know, the decision of the United Nations General Assembly is absurd, and there's a growing number of countries that refuse to participate in this theater of the absurd. That was Netanyahu's term for the vote.
Mm.
Now, the vote was 128-9.
Yeah.
128 people said, condemn Trump's establishing embassy in Jerusalem is a violation of the 1980 original act. So, and that capital of Jerusalem should be null and void. That's what he said. So Benjamin Netanyahu says, well, you know, there were nine countries that voted against that proposal to condemn Trump. And therefore, that's a growing number of countries refusing to participate in the theater of the absurd. You know who those nine countries were? Israel, Guatemala, Honduras, and then we get to the Pacific Islands, Marshall Islands, Micronesia, Nauru, Palau, and Tonga. So of the so-called nine countries that voted against the condemnation of Trump's moving the embassy, four of them were tiny little specks out in the Pacific Ocean. Now that's the growing number of countries participating, refusing to participate in the theater of the absurd. I would say Netanyahu's engaging in the theater of the absurd. If he claims that that shows support for him, Togo, Palau, Nauru, get your map out and find those little bits of speck in the Pacific. Okay? So this is, again, it's a question of, you know, he said, she said. Well, if you start examining it under a microscope, nine tiny little countries of irrelevance.
How can you come to terms with anything if nobody's telling the truth? You can't.
Well, you can, but you have to clarify it. That's the problem. And that, as I said, Netanyahu calling this a theater of the absurd because 128 countries voted to condemn Trump's moving the embassy to Jerusalem. Those are not the tiny little specks out there in the middle. These are big countries like Brazil and you know, maybe Poland or China or something. They're not the speck Nauru and Togo, Palau and Togo. So we need to dig beyond the spin and the propaganda in order to really get to the truth. As I said, my point here in outlining this is that Trump did break international law when he established the embassy in Jerusalem. Now, I'm surprised that Biden did not reverse that decision and pull the embassy out of Jerusalem and move it back to Tel Aviv, where all the other countries have their embassies. But Biden didn't have the guts to do that because he wants the Jewish vote. So we're basically playing domestic politics with international politics.
We don't have many Jews here.
We have 7 million Jews living in America.
That's not much.
It's not much, but the Jewish also provide a lot of funding, and that's where the Democrats are particularly interested in the funds from the Jewish community. It's not the votes from the Jews.
Why is it the Jews have such a proclivity and ability to gather funds?
They're good at banking.
Do you know during the American Revolution, there was a Jewish man that gave George Washington and those guys $1 million. Did you know that?
$1 million.
How do you get $1 million back then?
That's a lot. But that would be like $1 billion now.
Yeah.
Yeah, something.
$1 million.
Yeah.
A Jewish guy.
Yeah. Well, you know, Jews have always been talented in banking, and they're talented in many areas.
That's why they're hated, right?
No, but
why are they first hated? Why can't somebody give me a straight answer?
We already talked about that. The Catholics back in the Middle Ages and the Nazis with the Bolsheviks. The Jews were seen as promoters of Bolshevik. And
so it subjugated the authority of the government, and they didn't like that. Just like China took out the guys in the orange outfits, the monks, you know.
The Dalai Lama and the Tibetans.
Why would they kill Tibetan monks who were totally into peace and love?
Yeah.
They won't even step on a fly, literally.
Right. I know. Well, anyway, I think we've covered—
Because they felt that subjugated their authority.
Well, I think we've covered that pretty well. There is a lot of debate over this Jerusalem embassy issue and the fact that Trump's honoring this so-called congressional request for moving the embassy there was in effect violating the international laws that had been established for relations. Just because a congressman says, I want to do something, does not make it legal. Okay, and you know, what we have as laws within our United States do not necessarily extend outside of the United States.
Do you believe in any way, shape, or form
yeah.
that the Democrats have weaponized the FBI or the CIA?
No, and I don't think that they've weaponized the court system either, okay? As far as I'm concerned, I do not agree that all of these court cases against the former
Trump
president—
not trumped up.
The former, I don't believe those are—
There's no proof that only we have everything on camera, what he said on this, what was it, January what?
January 7th.
Oh, is it October 7th, January 7th?
Yeah, January 6th, was it, or 7th? I think it was January 6th.
Noah?
Whatever that's, the January 6th. 6th. 6th, yeah, 6th.
Okay,
yeah,
so we got the 6th and we got the 7th. And what's going to happen on the 8th or something?
Yeah, so.
Do you believe that Trump is responsible for those people going? He did not inflame them. He said go and protest. He never said anything about burning down or breaking in or anything.
Actually, his tweets prior to that gathering on the 6th said—
were inflammatory?
Yes, he said, it will be wild. It will be wild. That was his tweet, actually, the word, it will be wild. Be there, it will be wild.
Oh, my, come on.
Yeah.
You know?
Okay.
It will be wild.
Wild, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So anyway—
that's not violence.
And a lot of the police authorities—
well, that's a bunch of BS, and you won't even admit to the fact that they've weaponized the FBI and the CIA.
A lot of the police authorities were very alarmed at the planning for that January 6th event. Okay, they were very concerned about it. They anticipated
it. I don't see that there was any planning, because if they're planned, they could have accomplished something, maybe.
Well, I don't want to—
I recently had been at the Capitol.
Yeah.
You don't go in that way. Yeah, I had to go on underground tunnel. I had to get special approval months in advance.
Yeah.
I mean, the whole thing.
Yeah.
So you don't walk through the door.
You don't climb the walls and then break the windows.
But why did the police step aside and let them go in? Because they were intimidated?
Yeah, I think so. I think they were
intimidated. Why didn't Nancy Pelosi bring in the guard? They could have been there.
The National Guard was under the control of Mr. Patel.
Mr. Patel?
Yes.
The guy that owns the 7-Elevens?
No, actually, this is a different guy. Mr. Patel.
You lived in India.
Yeah, I did live in India.
Three years?
Yeah. But Mr. Patel and the Defense Department has a role over the National Guard and the movement of the National Guard. That's a very complicated story. Why didn't National Guard get mobilized? Yeah. You saw Trump mobilizing the National Guard up to the point of having them on the steps of the Capitol with Lincoln Memorial.
Mm-hmm.
That was at the time of the Black riots, the burning of this church. Was it the burning of the church or the defamation of the church? And that was in the summer, before October. And remember, Trump went out and walked down the street. He'd raised the Bible in front of him.
What was that whole thing about?
That was in the summer. And that was at the time that that Trump mobilized the National Guard. Okay.
Even people on TV last night that were being interviewed on NBC and ABC, I try to keep up with them all, said, we think he's best for the country, but we just hope that he'll, essentially shut his mouth and not respond emotionally and inflammatory in the way he has them. You know, he'd have no problem if he would. People don't care how much you know till they know how much you care. If I could become friends with Donald Trump now, I'd say, do you want to trust me? I am the shoeshine boy. I have nothing against you. I'm for you. I voted for you twice. I'll vote for you again this time. But I got to, people don't care how much you know till they know how much you care. Now, last night, did you see his acceptance speech, this Power Tuesday or whatever it is? Very calm. Someone has told him to calm down. Most of the time, he's holding his tongue. I'm a man, and I still remember when he went like this, and he was mocking that guy.
Yeah, right.
That's bad behavior. A little boy, I would say, what are you doing, mocking that man? You don't mock a man who has a disease.
Right.
And also, I knew General Colin Powell, and I liked General Colin Powell. I interviewed General Colin Powell.
Yeah.
And for him to say nasty things about General Colin Powell the day after he's dead is a wrong thing to do, right?
Right.
The wrong thing to do.
Yeah. Well, anyway, I don't want to get off on domestic politics. That's not my topic. We're dealing with international affairs.
Okay. So you lived in Pakistan.
Yeah.
You lived in South Korea. You lived in India. You lived in Spain. Where else did you live?
Ukraine. Yeah.
So you can reflect.
Right.
Let's be two calm older men now.
Okay.
I can't understand why in the Bible it says God repented of having made man.
Right.
I mean, he gave free will. And look what's going on. And people were, why does God allow rape? Why does God allow? Because God gave, hey, you want to see? There was a rebellion. We don't quite understand it. Long time ago in a distant land, there was a rebellion. Yes, ma'am. So God said, okay, this time, free will. I'm going to give you free will. Let's see how you do without me.
Yeah.
Now, he does allow there to be a place of mercy, and that is called on your knees in prayer. And for some reason, at times, he will intervene.
Yeah.
But generally, man has free will.
Okay?
And look what we've done. What have we done?
Well, you know—
it's not very good what we've done.
If you look at the micro level— as you said before, man to man.
Micro is the small level.
Small, micro okay. level. If you look, you get out there and meet your Muslim friend and your Chinese yeah. friend and your
we
Korean
all get
friend.
Along.
We all get along. So, you know, the point is, you know, except for greed, power, and politics,
yeah.
man would get along fine.
And he won't even regulate himself.
Yeah. So the issue is controlling greed, power, and politics.
Let me tell you something. I don't know if you've studied this at all. Have you gotten into— people that go into recovery, of which I became a member late in life.
Okay.
I never was into drugs, didn't like, even by the time I get to Woodstock.
Yeah.
So my mother dies, a relationship ends, and I get addicted to scotch in my mid-50s.
Okay.
Only for less than a year. But I became alcoholic.
Right.
Okay, that brought me into these rooms where they have these 12-step programs. And through that, I was with a group of all men last night.
Yeah.
These are big motorcycle guys. It's a motorcycle group.
Yeah, out in Las Vegas.
No. This is South Florida I went to last night.
Oh.
And these guys, I used to beat up people just for the fun of it.
Yeah.
But now I love everybody because they almost died from addictions to drugs and alcohol.
Right.
They come into a 12-step program. You will not succeed unless you come to a place of honesty and then surrendering yourself to a higher power.
Right.
And this changes people. And, you know, I mean, even myself, who I thought I was a do-gooder and a good guy, and I do think essentially I was, and now I see the error of my ways in that, you know, I'm certainly not the perfect guy that I thought I was. You know, one guy got mad at me once down at the station. I remember him, Mike. He says, you're not as good as you think you are. I always remember why he said that. This is about 20-something years ago.
Yeah.
You're not as good as you think you are. And it always disturbed me. Why did he say that? And he later was friendly with me, and we got along. He even worked here. And I go, now I realize somewhat what he was saying. I'm not as good as that. Nobody's as good as they think they are because we're all, you know, why can't man get along? Why does greed?
Hey,
Noah. Okay.
You also have
can you
the.
You close that door because it's carrying through in here.
Yeah. We also have the issue of what I would consider to be PTSD.
PTSD,
post-traumatic stress disorder.
Yeah.
Now, you think about the Israelis who went through, or the Jews, I wouldn't call them Israelis because there was no Israel there.
Yeah.
There was only Jews who went through the Holocaust, the slaughter, rounding up, you know, putting on cattle trains sent to the execution centers by the Germans in Poland mostly, from Slovakia, from Germany, from France. They were trying to bring them in. The Italians— were asked to send Jews to the camps, and the Pope was able to use some sort of soft measures with Mussolini to prevent those Jews living in Italy from being sent to the slaughter.
I never knew that.
Yeah, I know. Well, that's something—
that's beautiful.
Yeah, so—
like Schindler.
The Pope was responsible for saving many of those and also for putting in some word to the Slovakians to not send their people to the because the Germans were saying send them all over to Dachau and we're going to get rid of them. Yeah.
Genocide.
Yeah. So
let me ask you this. Why did they have all these what I'm thinking about like I'm going to play dictator here and Hitler. Why did they have these people alive? Why didn't they just go they had the hardest time it seems burying people. They didn't make them dig the graves. It's like they couldn't kill people quick enough or something.
Well, the Germans are organized. So they had this organized plans for the way it would be done.
Was that to their detriment? That's why we have records of every Jew that was killed, every German, this, da-da-da-da-da, every Polish guy, because they kept dot the I's and cross the T's, the damn Germans, you know?
Yeah, but anyway, so...
Sprechen Sie Deutsch! My mother was partly German, so I know.
My point is that the Jews today, even today, suffer this post-traumatic stress disorder from the massacres of 75 years ago, 80 years ago.
Who?
The Jews.
Oh,
the Jews. All the Jews.
Yes.
Any Jew you meet, in the back of their mind, there's always this fear they might do it again.
And look what's happening in America.
Well, I'm just saying, you know, there is...
It's scary. Yeah. Where are all these people coming from?
So what I'm saying is...
I thought we got over that. I thought all the kids... you know what I was told by a kid? A kid in school, college, and he says, we're not being taught. In high school, they're not teaching about the Holocaust.
Right. Well,
what do you think of that? You're an educated guy.
Yeah. What I'm trying to say, instead of teaching the rest of the world about the Holocaust, which is okay, we need to do that. People need to know that that happened.
Never again.
But the people that are Jewish, they have what's called an irrational fear, and that's why they reacted so strongly to this attack by the Hamas. It was a terrible, gross act. But Israel reacted in what I call a super natural.
Yeah, I got a friend. Have you met my friend David from New York? Okay, he and I had some battles about 40 years ago.
Yeah.
We're like brothers.
Yeah.
Okay. So many years later, I'm filled with guilt because we had these altercations when we were younger.
Yeah.
And we simmered down our relationship. Now we're back stronger than ever. But,
yeah.
So I flew up to Albany, New York, and to a diner, met him there. And said, you know, I really want to say I'm sorry for it. He says, oh, you're doing a ninth step with me, aren't you? He says, Rhett, he said, I knew your buttons. I knew how to press them, and I always did.
Yeah.
And it's like, oh, my God, all those years of guilt, and he's admitting that he did things to inflame the situation to get me. Now, they're needling Israel, Hamas, right? There's all kinds of needling going on prior to all this.
Well, you might say that Israel was needling Hamas by shooting them, by arresting them, throwing people into jail.
Now, I will say this. I did see a documentary.
Yeah.
And it was made pre all this stuff.
Yeah.
And these beautiful little Palestinian boys were saying his friend was over near the border.
Yeah.
And was going through some garbage or something.
Got shot.
Yeah, and spending his life in a wheelchair.
Yeah, yeah. Well,
is there another side to that story?
In the book Sons to Hamas, when this guy,
in the book what?
Son of Hamas, the book Son of Hamas.
He's a Christian now.
He's a Christian now, but
and he's anti-Hamas.
He is now, but when he describes
his father was a leader in Hamas.
He described his growing up. He was 10 years old,
and
the Israelis arbitrarily would impose a lockdown or
capriciously
a lockdown. He was at school, and now they have essentially a lockdown, so he couldn't get back home from school. So he had to sneak through the back alleys to try to get home from school.
And that was dangerous?
And if the Israelis caught anybody out during these so-called lockdown periods, they would shoot them. So lots of children were killed by Israeli troops, and he describes that in his book.
Lots.
Yeah, he said it was common.
You read this book?
Yes, I read the book, cover to cover. And he describes—
And now he had a conversion to
He had a conversion to Christianity,
to, Jesus, yeah.
to Christianity. And he also became
What do you think of that?
And he also became a Shin Bet agent, an agent
mean?
For the that's like the FBI, the Israeli FBI. He became a secret agent for them, working to help identify Hamas inside, you know,
they
were spying.
He really had an epiphany with Jesus, apparently.
Yeah. But anyway,
his father headed up Hamas.
Hamas, yes. But the point I'm making is he describes his early life living under.
I wonder how that happened. Well, you read the book.
Yeah.
Tell me about it.
He describes his early life, and this is the part most people.
Should I read this book?
You might want to read it.
You read it?
I did read it,
was
cover
it
to cover.
Intense?
It's interesting.
Was it well written, though?
It was pretty well written. Yeah, it's adequate.
Because there's a new book out on MLK.
Martin Luther King, yeah.
Yeah, you go to any bookstore.
Yeah.
And I don't like buying big books because I don't think books should sell for $36 each. They're paper. But anyway, so there's this big, thick book out on Martin Luther King. Now, I've been going to the library, but every time I go, I take this book and I read a little bit more. I don't know what this guy did. I don't know what it is, because I guess I'm not a professional writer in the least.
Yeah.
Otherwise, I'd be able to know. Now, a professor of English would be able to tell me maybe. But it's kind of like James Patterson. He writes these simple little superficial books. He's the number one book. He makes $67 odd million a year. He's the number one author in the world.
Right.
He hires these people. He hires them. But he, you know, his chapters are boom, boom, boom. Next chapter two, boom, boom, boom. Chapter three goes through. He knows what he's doing. This book on MLK is not like that. It's not that concise and short. But whatever this guy's done, I open up a page anywhere, and I'm like, oh, it's just... It's so interesting. Yeah. I don't know how the – and it's probably an 800-page book.
Yeah.
But, I mean, so what I want to know is this book well-written like that? Because I have a hard time laboring through books that are not done by an artist. If you want to consider writing an art form, which I do.
Right. Yeah. No, this holds your attention. It's pretty well-written. His life story is fascinating. As I said, I focused on his early life story, and I'm mentioning that on the show because it reflects on how...
What's the name of the book?
It's called Son of Hamas.
Son of Hamas. I think it's outselling right now. The book's right?
Yeah. What
provoked you to buy that?
Actually, my brother is the one who...
The conservative brother?
The conservative brother, yeah.
And, hey, there you go, conservative brother.
And he was reflecting on it because I think it showed the conversion of this guy to Christianity and the influence of Christianity, as opposed to what I read in it, which was the early part, was his describing what his life was like under a Israeli rule as an occupied territory.
I'd be interested in reading that.
And this is a part most people kind of flash by that. They're thinking, oh, well, he's going to be a Christian. And he focuses a bit on how he works as a Mossad agent or a Shin Bet agent.
There's nobody with clean hands anywhere.
Yeah. Of course, you know, in my view, he was held as a prisoner by the Israelis in cruel, torturous positions.
He was?
Yes, he was. And
well, how did he get converted and released and all that?
This is the part that, you know, most people that aren't familiar with intelligence work, they don't, and with, you know, like our Guantanamo Bay and so forth, the idea that a intelligence operator will try to convert and get the prisoner to become a double agent by offering them nice guy, bad cop,
like
good cop.
If I go out and I become the number one bank robber in America, they're going to come to me and say, look, we're going to put you in jail, we'll throw away the key, unless you'd like to consult our CIA and FBI on how you did this.
And identify all the other bank robbers out there that are your friends. Yeah. That's what he was doing.
And they
give
you protection.
So they actually – he describes this elaborate Israeli operation of providing him with cover while he's meeting with the Shin Bet. He's actually being he's spying for the Israelis on Hamas. And that's why I have to question with that level of ability of the Israeli intelligence to penetrate Hamas – how did Hamas organize this attack?
Okay, then I have to interview this guy.
Yeah. Yeah. How did he organize?
Hey, do me a favor, would you? You've read the book?
Yeah.
You want to try your first experience about being a producer?
Loaning the book to you?
No. I want you to go home.
Oh.
And I'd like you to I deserve this as a friendship. Mm. I'm asking you to do me a favor. I want you to find out who the publisher is. I want to find out who this guy is. Try to connect him. There might be kind of. Put his name in, press contact. Content said, look, I do a show with a guy named Rhett Palmer. He's on one of the biggest.
Yeah, you've done a lot of book reviews for people. Yeah. Yeah.
Like 40,000, okay. According to the experts.
All right.
But anyway, so this guy would be perfect for my new station, WCNO, with his conversion.
Yeah. Okay.
Oh, that reminds me. Jonathan Kahn's people called me last week. Whatever happened to that? Anyway, so by the way, if you're trying to send us emails, our emails, we've had to get a new server, so we've had a real hard time with that. Hopefully by the end of this week, beginning of next, all that will be back to normal. So if you're wondering why we're not getting your emails, I've had people who write for our Vero's Voice magazine. Here's the new issue. They can't seem to get through. It's because of this server problem. Yeah, the server problem. So anyway, so we have a new server. Well, the other one went out of business or something. I don't know exactly what's going on. But
anyway, audience out there, thank you so much for listening.
Yeah.
This is, complicated topics. Rhett, I appreciate you're staying in the game, fighting to try to understand all this.
You put, you know. Look, I happen to know that I know pastors.
Yeah.
And the average pastor puts in 18 to 23 hours to write a sermon on Sunday. Yeah. It's a little half an hour sermon, maybe 40 minutes. Okay.
Yeah.
You do all this work for us to be on the air for a couple hours almost every time, you know.
Right. Well,
and so you've got to be spending a lot of time on in front of that screen.
Well, it's
like computer screen, right?
It's my gift to America and to the public to try to understand in a fun, entertaining way the complexities.
You know
of
what
these
I
things.
Think you should consider. I mean, want to talk about this? Doesn't matter we're on air and whatever. Why don't you consider? You know, I have to figure out how much it would cost. You come up. We have another. We take the podcast we're doing for Vero's Voice, which is nice. But Vero's Voice is not the appropriate name for what we're doing. Now, if you go on to podcast right now, it actually says it's like it looks like it's almost your show. I've let it go through under the table or whatever. It shouldn't because it's really my show.
Right.
But why not duplicate it? It's, for instance, the Time magazine just came out with a big article on what's her name? The girl, the singer? Whatever her name is.
Taylor Swift.
Taylor Swift. Okay, so I go into Barnes & Noble out in Las Vegas, out in Henderson this past week. And I go, Time magazine? I mean, they're doing it again? She's no, they put different covers on. Hmm. I didn't realize that. They took all these shots, and they throughout the country, they put to see which ones are picked up or whatever. Okay, so why don't we take this show and come up with a name, and it's strictly this. Strictly this. I don't know what we would do to attract that audience. It's worthy of being attracted to that audience. We're Vero's Voice. Soy Vey, what's Vero Beach? Yeah. I mean, you're in Israel. Well, you're not going to listen to Vero's Voice.
Well, I would like to see is once a quarter doing something with a live audience. That would be fun to have, you know, with you and me on a stage and an audience.
Yeah, now also we've worked out our troubles or whatever. We get I think there's some sort of a strong foundation of trust. You know I'm not here to hurt you, and you're not here to hurt me.
And yet
you
don't
want to make me look stupid even when I do look stupid, and I don't want to make you look whatever.
And we're not trashing each other,
no.
But we're not agreeing with each other.
No.
That's the point.
And we try not to talk over each other. Sometimes sometimes you, oddly first, I've gotten emotional, blah, blah, blah. But now of late, you've had your emotional times too.
Yeah.
But I think now that we're seasoned in that, 4 or 5 years, 6 years we've been doing this, we could do a live audience. And, of course, it's going to change the dynamic.
Sure.
I know me. I know I'm going to be more reticent in front of a live audience because I know I got people right there looking at me going, shut up, you're interrupting him. You know?
Like being Hannity again.
Yeah. Today I got a note across the screen here.
Yeah.
Stop being Hannity
from
Noah.
We can have Noah come to the show. And he can have
signs. Stop being Hannity.
All right. Hey, brother.
Right,
we
got to
go. Yeah,
right.
That's fun.
God
that's
bless
fun.
You. Hey, this is the mayor of the airwaves. We've been talking with former U.S. diplomat David Hunter. Peace. Pray for the peace of Jerusalem. The Lord says, I will bless them that bless thee. And what's the title of that book by the former son of Hamas leader? What's
son
the name?
Son of Hamas.
Son of Hamas. Let's get that book. Let's get that author on my show. Who loves you, baby?